Welcome to Red Inca. I'm Jared Kimber. This episode of Red Inca, we talk about the WPL with our resident expert.
Mr. Vasudevan, and I work for Good Areas with you, and I also do a bit of freelance writing.
We look at the winners, RCB, scouting, local players, which teams might need a mega auction, Annabelle Sutherland, all-rounders, bad management, and how this was a massive moment for women's cricket, unlike anything we've ever seen in the international game. I wonder what you're going to say there. I got you on to talk about the... Are we calling it the WPL now? Or the... Because I feel like there was a meeting that was had without me and people have now started WPL. But there is... Is that are we just happy with that? Is that just what it is now?
Well, it has to be, no? That's the official name they've given the tournament, so...
But there was WIPL for a while as well that was being talked about, and the Whipple. So it's just we're just going with WPL. It just feels like that's too easy a name for other people to copy. But
yeah,
maybe if they've got the rights to it, I don't know. And good on them if they have. Let's start with the RCB because they won. They probably weren't the best team in this tournament, right?
Mm. Yeah, they finished third in the round, right? So didn't perform as well as the other two teams who, I think on paper, everyone was looking at DC and Mumbai Indians to kind of dominate things. And it did pan out in that way during the group stage. But RCB were a lot better. I mean, I think in the last tournament, their first five games, they lost four or they lost three. So they started off on the wrong foot. It was the complete opposite this time around. So they did have that kind of momentum and they could afford to lose a game or two here and there. But I think what was different was that even the games they lost were a lot closer than what we saw in last season.
Yeah, they lost a game by a run. I know they almost stole that one from Delhi early on and everything. Bowling options, they seem to have about nine bowling options in every game.
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of all-rounders, right? And I think that's just the thing with the women's game right now, right? You have a lot of all-round options. And I think it's particularly true when you're recruiting overseas players because sometimes you have to fill that gap of how you picked your domestic players. So you need to have those options. But then when you actually look at it, I know Ellis Perry got wickets and turned out to be one of their, you know, key bowlers in the end. But she hasn't really bowled that much over the last couple of years. Certainly not where you could say that, you know, she's going to bowl four overs for you.
And you just mentioned Ellis Perry. It was a very experienced team. I mean, they would have had Heather Knight as well, wouldn't they? Like, so it would have been like, or apologies to Heather before I say this, but it would have been an incredibly old team. And it's quite an old team when you look at it. Like, it, you know, it's got a throwback to the old RC. Remember when RCB in the men's competition had the test lineup back when they started? Like, it's got a bit of a throwback to, like, the, you know, let's just get our old favourite players together.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't want to compare it to the old RCB team because I think it's going better through some of the records. Yeah, they had Chandrapal and Dravid opening the batting in some of the games, I think. So, not quite at that level. But also, a fun fact, they did want to buy Chamari Athappatthu to replace Heather Knight. So, I think that would have made them even older. but instead went with the clerk. So, older players, but I think also players that are still kind of really performing well. If you look at even the domestic players, they had players like Asha Shobana, who is, I think, 32 or 33, so not the youngest on the circuit. And I know she was expecting to play maybe one or two seasons of the WPL, but could have a longer stint, right? They are the ones who kind of breathe life into the tournament, to the campaign, I think, because last season was, I think, for the players they got, you know, RCB always goes for the star-studded teams, right? And they did have that star quality, but just couldn't perform. So for that, I think the experience really came through. And you could see that in some of the big games, like the last three games that they played, how that experience was helping them. Particularly, I would say, players like Perry, even Molyneux and Viaram, who may not be that old in age, they've got a lot of experience playing a lot of T20 cricket. They played a lot for Australia as well. So that experience really came through in kind of closing out games, I felt.
And just take me through their scouting. So, I mean, a lot of their players are experienced, but there was also, they were also, from what I could see on the hipsters side of things, it felt like they were maybe a little bit more sharp when it came to the players they picked.
Yeah, actually, there are some good pieces on what happened behind the scenes. So Smriti Mandana had been given the task of kind of, you know, given that freedom to pick the players that she wants and to kind of start building a year ahead. And I think one key player, and it was funny because just before the tournament, they did a little social media video where each captain was asked who the players from the team are, you know, we should look out for. And I was a bit surprised when Mandana said Sophie Molyneux, because not because she's not a good player. She's obviously a very good player, smart cricketer, but she's already an established international player, but she hadn't really featured for Australia in the last 2 years, right? So it was interesting that Molyneux's name came up in that video, because a lot of the captains were going for, you know, young domestic players or some of the newcomers in the WPL. But in Molyneux, I think they found someone who is a bowler who can bowl in all phases. And she's done that for Australia as well. And then I know they were looking at a good wrist spinner, and they were looking at Alana King as well as Georgia Wareham and Amanda Wellington. And if you take the three of them, and I think that's a selection headache for the Australian selectors as well, right? Because all three of them, I think, in terms of bowling, are on par with each other. But Wareham won kind of wins over people because of the way she bats. And that ended up actually making a huge difference to their campaign, because I think it was the eliminator where she hit a last ball six and RCB ended up winning by, was it 1 run or 2 runs? So
yeah, she made like 18 off 10, was it that game?
Yeah. Just the way they had, I mean, when you already got Sophie Devine, Elise Perry, Heather Knight in your squad, you tend to think that, you know, you've got the batting covered, but they looked for a lot more, I think, little things that maybe some of the other teams that didn't do too well had missed out on.
Let's go on to Delhi. So Delhi probably have the best record in the two seasons. I haven't had a look at it, but it's pretty good. You've written, and I'm going to throw you under the bus here. You've written, are they the WPL chokers? That was Estelle Vasudevan _ No. I mean, it's weird because there's only five teams in this, right? And they've been the best team probably throughout the entire, you know, series so far. Even by dumb luck, they should have won a final. Like, it feels like it would be different if you were playing, you know, in a 6 or an 8-team league or a 10-team league. But even over the short period, it does feel like they should have gone through. Do you think they're chokers, or do you just think they had a bad game in the final?
It's an interesting one because, like you said, they've got the best record, right, over the two tournaments. They're the team that have made the final directly in both competitions, and fallen short both times. The reason why I mentioned the word chokers is because in both finals, they were both low-scoring affairs, and both times they batted first, right? And here, I just felt like after the start they got, some of the shots that were played by that middle order, which, you know, is not that inexperienced. I mean, you've got Alice Capsey. I know she's 19 or 20, but she's played plenty of cricket for England. Jemima Rodrigues, you've got Marizan Kapp, you've got Jess Jonathan, all in that middle order. And some of those shots that were played, really, it did really feel like they were panicking when they didn't need to, because, you know, runs on the board is always valuable in a final like this. And, you know, they made it hard for RCB to even chase 113, right? So if they had kind of stuck around, been able to get to that 130 to 140 mark, they would, I think with their bowling lineup, they would definitely have stood a chance. But just that panic in the middle makes you kind of question, did it get to them? Did that pressure of playing a big final, playing in their home grounds, and despite playing in their home grounds, not having the majority support, did it get to them?
This is the most interesting one. So Annabelle Sutherland was signed for 20 million rupees, so 20 crore, which is about $250,000. So well done to her. Not really a factor at all. So what happened? She got in the nets and they thought she wasn't ideal. Was she injured and they never told us? Or what do you think?
Yes, she played, I think, the first couple of games. But then Jess Jonathan came in. She took a 4-wicket haul and she scored like 20 or 30 quick runs at the death. And then I think that's the toss-up, right? Do you want a bowler who's had the experience of bowling at all different kinds of competitions, different phases of the game, who's been so successful in domestic and international cricket, like Jess Jonathan? Or do you go for a young player who you know is talented and has great potential? I was actually really interested to see how they would go, because I also thought there might be a conversation whether they leave out Capsie, but Capsie was superb as well. I just think that in the WPL, you have so many quality international players that you're going to have a few of them sitting out. And we saw that in a lot of the teams.
Yeah, I kind of also wonder if there is an element of exactly what happened with Cameron Green, which is Cameron Green made a big score against India. He's an all-rounder and everyone knows who he is. And then the draft comes around and he's not in the side. So, of course, everyone overpays for him, despite the fact that he hadn't really done all that much. I know Annabelle has a much better record than Cameron does in limited overs coming in. But it did feel like at the time it was a bit of a reach. Also, as a general rule, bounce bowlers don't do that well in India because the wickets don't bounce all that much. And that's her, like 80% of her bowling skill. It comes from sort of, you know, that side of things. So it did feel to me like it was a bit of a reach. They were we talked about the last team being old. They're quite young, aren't they? That particular side, like, you know, I don't know, and maybe that's part of bringing someone like, you know, Jess Jonathan in, is that they needed someone just a little bit younger to come in. And also, Jess Jonathan didn't have a good year the year before, but maybe they needed a little bit more experience, especially, you know, maybe that's what showed up in the final.
Yeah, I think that would definitely have been a factor. I think if you look at the Delhi squad, they've got basically every base covered. I think at the auction, they had just three picks. One of them was Annabelle. So they don't really have too many holes in that team. And if you look at it, they've got some really good young Indian players. They've got Shafali Verma. They've got Jemima Rodrigues. And they've got Minumani, who is also done well at the domestic level. So they've got a lot of those youngsters. But at the same time, like you mentioned, they may have felt like they need that experience in the lower middle order with the bat, because, I mean, I know they've got a few players, but I don't think a lot of people would have expected Jemima to score as quickly as she did in this tournament. She was fantastic with the bat. And Marizan Kapp, who is, great, but with the bat tends sometimes to be a bit on the slower side, but whereas Jonathan can do a bit of that power hitting in the lower middle order. So all of that may have factored in. But yeah, I think experience, and also they did have good fast bowlers, domestic fast bowlers in their lineup. So they didn't really need another overseas option, I think, to bowl quick.
Mumbai were the favourites coming in. They didn't make the finals. I'm trying to remember, what happened in the RCB game? Because they played RCB in the qualifying final, didn't they?
So
I can't remember any of it.
They needed 20 of 18 deliveries.
Of course, it was that game.
Yeah. With Kerr and Harmanpreet at the crease, and they still lost, which was crazy. Just insane.
And they had two of the best players in the world at the crease. Set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, and I think that also goes to show the strength of RCB, right? They had their spinners bowling those final three overs. And Harmanpreet was dropped in the over she eventually got out in. I don't know whether things would have changed if she was gone the first delivery, but they just weren't able to find the boundaries against the spinners. And that kind of, you know, we talk about bowlers winning your tournaments. I think that really came true for RCB in the last, those clutch matches. I mean, the game where they needed to win to make it to the top three, Perry produced a six-wicket haul. And in the eliminator, those spinners really, I mean, 20 of 18, Harmanpreet and Amelia Kerr at the crease, you'd expect them to get it 10 times out of 10, right? But they somehow managed to restrict them.
Yeah, no, that was ridiculous. Harmanpreet is back. I saw her, big fan of her wearing the sunglasses on her head all the way through night games. I don't want to say she's been struggling, but she maybe hasn't been at her absolute best for a little while, right? If you need your pitch changed, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set for you to win. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? Give NordVPN the ball. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow, promote NordVPN to pinch hit. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months and gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a bowler protects the boundaries in the death overs with nordvpn.com/Kimber today.
Yeah, for certain. I think there have been questions about her form. I think there were some questions coming into this tournament as well. But she seemed to thrive in that environment and produced. When she gets going, and we saw that in 2017 in that World Cup, you can't. There's nothing you can do, right? There's no way you can stop her because she seems to hit around the wicket. Isn't really, you know, susceptible to any sort of delivery when she gets going, right? And I mean, even looking back at the 2023 T20 World Cup in South Africa, India were well on their way to beating Australia in that semi-final. And then it was a freak run out that kind of changed fortunes. Again, it was her, right? So when she gets going, there's no stopping her. But those exceptional knocks, I think, were getting very rare, but she did produce one of them in this tournament.
And the other thing is the all-rounders thing is quite interesting in women's cricket, because as players get more professional and more athletes come in, you know, all-rounders should naturally sort of disappear. It should be more of a specialist kind of situation. But there's still so many all-rounders at the moment. But I remember, I think it was when we did the World Cup, when me and Sharon did research for the World Cup, when that was. What we noticed is that there's more people who are called all-rounders now, who really their second skill isn't all that important. And so if you scout and you know your team slightly wrong, so RCB obviously got the mix fairly right, but you could go the other direction quite easily and end up with a bunch of players who aren't quite good enough on either side of the ball, and so you don't get a team. Is that a fair way of looking at Mumbai?
That's a tough question, I think, because if you look at their overseas picks, Natsi Vibrant, Hayley Matthews, Amelia Kerr, I think you can call them genuine all-rounders, right? They can produce match-winning knocks or, you know, that match-winning spell. I think Pooja Vastrakha is one who didn't quite fire, who is also termed as an all-rounder, didn't have the best of tournaments. And you'd expect, since she does play that kind of Hardik Pandya role for India, that she would have been one of the players that they were looking at to make runs and pick up wickets, but that didn't quite pan out. I don't know, it's very difficult to look at Mumbai. I think going into the tournament, when we did the preview for the YouTube channel as well, on paper, they look like the best team, right? Because Sivabrant, Hayley Matthews and Kerr are basically two players in one. They can give you anything on any given day, right? But they just, I don't know what happened. They just couldn't produce when they needed to. And I mean, if they had just scored those 20 runs off 18 balls, we probably won't be having this conversation, right?
Also, the other way of looking at it is, and that is a very good way of looking at it, the other way of looking at it is sometimes it's about the form. So you can pick the right players. It's such a short season, right? And so, you know, you only need a handful of games to go. You know, if you're a player, you might play well in two or three games, but be terrible in a couple of games. And then that's it. There's no way of fighting back from that. Anyway, you've said they're finished. So, UP Warriors. Mm-hmm. I want to call. Is this just me? Every time you see the name, and I know what UP is, but every time you see the name, do you just want to say Up Warriors?
Yeah.
Is it just me? Yeah. It just looks like Up Warriors, and I don't know if anyone refers to them as Up Warriors, but it just every time. Anyway, their squad was all over the place. They did make an error in their draft auction process, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they made really big errors. Our first one was letting Shabnim Ismail go. I don't know whether that was, you know, the player wanted out because she didn't get to play too many games in the first season. And then when they lost Belle, they replaced her with, lost Shabnim Ismail and they replaced her with Danny Wyatt in the auction, which to me is a strange choice. I mean, Danny Wyatt
is not like for like.
Yeah, it's not like for like. And you already have that overseas option in Alyssa Healy, who is a captain, and you're not dropping her, right, as an opener. She's going to open for you in every game. So I thought that was a bit of a strange one. Then it got weirder once Belle pulled out. They picked Chamari Atapattu. Again, not like for like. Not at all like for like. I mean, obviously, I'm a huge fan of Atapattu, and I do think she deserved to be amongst those players in the WPL because she's had such a fantastic 2 years.
But that I remember
was a weird
when
decision,
the,
right?
I remember when the draft happened, and I think it was you, me, and Sham were talking about the draft and about essentially teams had to pick. But we were thinking that teams were picking between her and Wyatt, right? And we could understand why you might go for Wyatt over her. Mm. And you know, we still thought that she should. She should be in the, over one of the squads. But we understood that. To go from that, though, to one team picking both of them, just none of it made any sense. And it does feel like, you know, you have a look at some of these other leagues, and, you know, I've worked in some of these leagues before, where they just pick the most famous players, right? And they don't, you know, I mean, I worked at St. Lucia when we had 5 opening batters, right? Like, you know, those sorts of things where you just sit in there and go, well, how is everyone going to play? Like, what, you know, and you end up with David Warner in the 7th game batting at number 4 and just going, well, this is terrible, right? That's kind of, every time I would look up the Warriors, that's kind of what I would see. It's just like, it just felt like someone said, we need the most famous players. And it's gone pretty much to hell from there.
Yeah, and this, I mean, you've worked with a lot of franchise teams, right? And when you look at a tournament like this, your first job is to kind of sort out your domestic players, right?
Always.
And then you pick overseas players to fill in the gaps where you don't have. So with UP Warriors, they didn't have, like, if you look at the 3 teams we already discussed, they had a lot of players who are playing for India right now, capped players. They had that experience from the domestic players. UP Warriors doesn't really have that. I mean, they have a couple of players here and there, but they didn't really have that. And then to make matters worse, instead of picking overseas players who can fill the gaps that they have, Atapattu, in a sense, you know, she does offer that all-round option. But like you said, just picking, going with Wyatt and then also picking Atapattu was really strange.
It's funny. It's one. I think it's what Chennai got right in the men's competition for so long, right? Which was, if we can get the best local talent together, and then we can find international players who will then give us either flexibility or be advanced role players. That's the best way of doing it. And usually, what happens is, I can tell you this for a fact. Usually, what happens is you have an owner who wants a couple of famous players. So what you do is you try and say to them, okay, who's your dream player? You know, and it's like, my dream player is AB de Villiers. It's right, great. So you call her in, you try and get AB de Villiers. And then what you do from there is you go, now let me do my job. And you try and go back from there. This feels like the fact that Chamari ended up at this team just feels like, I just want the most famous women. I just want the most famous women. I just want the best players. I just want the biggest names over and over again rather than anything else. But the bigger mistake isn't the Danny Wyatt Chamari thing. The biggest mistake is actually before that, of not making sure that you have that strong Indian core.
Yeah.
Also, they didn't field very well, which doesn't help either. And it's interesting because they're not one of the teams linked to a franchise. right? You know, a men's franchise. It does feel like they're making a lot of mistakes that early franchises make. And so you've talk about the local players. Then you talk about what looks like them just going out and getting famous players. The third one is role clarity of like, you need to make sure you've got players who can do each individual role. I'd be fascinated to, you know, have a chat with someone from them and about what they think went wrong. But those seem to be the three main issues. And if you go back through the history of franchise cricket, especially in the men's game, that's what every team did wrong at the start, right? Like, it was just like, we just need sloggers. You do, but this guy needs to bat at number six and this guy needs to bat at number three. And you've got two guys who can bat at number six and no one who can bat at number three. It feels like looking at their squad again, it was a little bit like that. The balance was never right.
Yeah, and what was strange was also that what worked for them in the first season, they finished third. Yeah. What worked for them, they deviated from that. Like, they had Kiran Navgire and Grace Harris in that middle order at 5, 6, 7. The ones who could close out the games. But in this tournament, they decided to top load completely. I mean, once one of their openers got injured, they promoted Navgire. She did well. And they completely top loaded. They had, I think, Grace Harris batting at 4, Atapattu at 3. So basically, once those top 4 are gone, you're in deep trouble, right? You don't have that middle order or that experience in the middle order to do much. So that part was really disappointing. When you look at, you know, they could have made more of the tournament if they had kind of worked with the resources they had in a better way.
And that's another thing that teams do is, and you see this everywhere, of like, if your top four is good in a franchise cricket, that probably means that you don't have 5, 6, and 7. So you do need to find a way to make sure that works a little bit better. But let's go to the Gujarat Giants, who a bit all over the shop in this one. They've kind of completely changed what they did in season one to season two when it comes to backroom staff and everything. Fair to say that didn't work.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of work that went on behind the scenes, but it seemed like they all just turned up one day and decided that they would play this tournament. That's how, I mean, it looked really shambolic. I think even before the tournament started, they were going to be the like real underdogs, right? But we've seen in the past in tournaments, you can make that work if you kind of plan things properly. But it did seem like they were a bit lost. I don't know whether that's like that truly reflects what went on within the camp. But, you know, just the way, also they were not willing to kind of change things up. They had Ash Gardner and Phoebe Litchfield, who didn't really make any runs at all. I mean, Ash Gardner, I understand persisting with her because she's a lower middle order bat who can get quick runs, right? But someone like Litchfield,
and she can bowl.
They just persisted with her even though she was not making runs. And I know she has an incredible record coming into this tournament, but she's a really young player as well, right? And they did have a few players on the bench like Liata Huhu, who may have made an impact with the ball, particularly because they kind of had a really inexperienced bowling attack. So I don't know. It seemed like they didn't really learn much from the first tournament because they weren't really in the competition maybe from the second game onwards.
I think the other interesting thing for me is that, like, again, in a short tournament like this, form is so important. So I think it's worth saying that they're a bit of a mess and maybe didn't know what they were doing. But if you do have 3 or 4 players, especially important players who aren't informed, there's nowhere to go in a tournament like this. When's the next mega auction that they might need?
Yeah, I think both them and UP Warriors will be waiting for it because, like I mentioned when we were talking about the Warriors, the local talent is the problem. I'm sure there are a lot of talented players in who they've picked, but they are really lacking that kind of quality, or we haven't seen any of it, right? You've seen the odd player doing well, like someone like Kiran Navgire, I'm sure would have, like, I mean, you look at her score runs, you're saying she should be in the Indian side. But then you look at how she gets out and how rarely she does make runs. It makes you question, right? And those are the things I think they need to be working on once the season is done, building up to the next tournament. I don't know when the next mega auction is. I wonder if there will be a new team as well, because like you said, it is a very short season. And once you kind of lose out...
And it's been successful as well.
Yeah.
You need more teams already, right? It already looks silly with five teams, but you definitely need more, right?
Yeah, you do. But I think you do need a mega auction, because with the remaining Indian talent, it'll be tough to make up a competitive sixth team, I feel, because just because of the way Gujarat and UP Warriors have struggled.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. But you know, that is it. That's kind of what the idea is anyway. Like if you're running a franchise, especially in women's cricket, I think at the moment, especially in a league that's going to have five or six teams, right? Like the best thing you can do is just get as much Indian talent available to you. Yeah. Because there's always going to be a really talented Australian woman or a South African or, you know, Sri Lankan and West Indian and English that is going to be not in that, you know, that people aren't going to pay a fortune to, who is going to do a job within 5% of the people who are getting paid a fortune, right? You know, then you may not be able to get Jess Jonathan, but there's someone else. You may not be able to get, you know, Georgia Wareham, but there's four other leg spinners out there that you can find. And so it makes a lot more sense, really, when you're putting this together to go, okay, because every good woman in the world who can play cricket is going to play in this competition. Mm. What we have to do now is just make sure that we have the best Indian lineup of anyone. Yeah. And then we'll pick the Mike Hussies, the Moeen Allies, the George Baileys, the, you know, those sort of, not the big name stars, you know, Sam Currans and all those sorts of players. That CSK model still works for many different teams around the world. It's a much better way of doing it. Whereas you look at this and you think to yourself, this is not ideal. But just on the extra teams, I know there's a real worry within India that the domestic quality isn't there. Of course, if you actually get more teams, the domestic quality will rise really quickly anyway, as we saw with Australia. But I would think now that these other IPL men's franchises are sitting there going, we need to be involved with this. This is too big. It's also just, it extends your season by a month. It extends your social media. It allows you to get to other sponsors that you're not always involved with. Plus, I've said this for ages, women's cricket is the best thing to invest in. And if I was going to invest in anything, it would be in women's cricket in India. That is where the big boom is going to go. So have you been surprised at how impressive, but that's not the phrase I mean. Have you been surprised at how successful the tournament has been, even after 2 years?
Yeah, I was really surprised to see the passion of the crowds during the tournament. And I think it helped that it was being played, the first part of it was played in Bangalore. They played a couple of games there and then they moved to Delhi. And they kind of covered the three cities where, you know, it was the franchise teams, Delhi, Mumbai and RCB, right? The crowd was insane. I think, you know, when Australia hosted that World Cup final and, you know, drew in a crowd of 80,000, you thought that was like the big moment for women's cricket, right? But I think this tournament might be the one that really sets things off, because you've seen support from places that you don't usually see. And I know culturally it's been difficult for a lot of players, I'm sure, of older generations to come up, right? In countries like, India, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh. But now when you see how they're being received, that will automatically, I think, increase participation even more. And, you know, that's just going to create a whole different kind of environment for the game to grow.
So the thing that I've been most interested in, so I've covered a couple of Women's World Cups, obviously being to, you know, the Women's Big Bash. There's quite, Women's Big Bash and Women's 100. When you go to those tournaments, it's a women's cricket audience, which is great because in some ways it's far more enjoyable. If you ask me what sort of crowd I prefer to walk through at any stage, it will be a women's cricket audience than a men's cricket audience, right? It's very different, much more family orientated, quite often younger, plus there are actual human females there, you know, and, you know, in a much higher amount than you get in men's cricket. I think the reason that this is so important is because these are a lot of the people, especially you have a look at the RCB, but I think the same thing happened with Mumbai and with Delhi. These are people who follow the men's and the women's teams. And that doesn't happen as much in international cricket as you would think. In fact, I'd say it's quite rare in international cricket. And I think some of it is a generational thing. These people are, some of these fans are so young, and women's cricket has been good pretty much throughout most of their life, right? You know, that most of those people in watching that final were probably younger than Elise Perry's career, right? Like, you know, that's, and so to them, Elise Perry is, you know, a rightful god of cricket, yeah. Right? And that's a whole different situation than what we see with men's cricket and everything else. And I really started to notice a change when, and it was the younger fans coming through and the way they were younger male fans, the way they were discussing women's cricket at grounds, but also online and everything. And I was like, oh, okay, this is the change. And then you see the fact that, you know, I think we did the video yesterday where it's quite clear that the most important thing was the RCB badge. The least important thing was whether you had a penis or a vagina, right? And that's just huge, because that is not what men's cricket has been. Like, it hasn't gone over that way. And you and I both know that, like, a lot of the people who supported women's cricket, they didn't even support men's cricket. So there wasn't even a crossover in any way. And it feels, watching this tournament, that the future is at the crossover, right? Of and you see it in the WNBA. Like, a lot of the podcasts I listen to in the NBA now also cover bits of the WNBA, and it's just interchangeable, right? You know, this player's being signed and this player's being signed. It doesn't really matter to them what gender, and they're trying to explain how it's going to work.
Yeah.
That wasn't the cricket media / fan experience that we had seen before. And now it does feel like that's the next big thing.
Yeah, 100%. I think that, you know, while we don't always like when the women's game is compared to the men's game, or men's players are, you know, brought to the forefront of content when we talk about the women's game, we've seen what a huge impact it can make. I think I read somewhere where some of the fans were asked, why do you support RCB? And most of them said, it's because it's Kohli's team. But that doesn't mean that they don't then support the women, right? They support RCB as a franchise. And that was superb to see. I don't think we saw that with Mumbai Indians, or not really with Delhi either.
I didn't notice it as much. No, I agree.
Yeah. Maybe it comes down to the fact that RCB fans are united by the disappointment of never having won a title, right? Like, no, I mean, like, for Mumbai,
no, you're right.
They've won so many that, you know, it's no longer such a big deal. But for RCB, it was extra special, because they've, you know, followed this team through the last 16 years. And then to finally have that moment, and they were received well at the Unbox event RCB had as well. They had a guard of honor for the women's team. So, I mean, all round, they've done a good job, I think.
So what you're really saying here is that RCB being so terrible in men's cricket is actually exactly what women's cricket has always needed.
Maybe. It's possible, right?
Thanks for coming on the show. I mean, I say thanks. I forced you on because you worked for me. You didn't have a choice. But thank you for coming on anyway.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.